What is up, people? Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. I'm Devin Readers. This is a podcast where we talk about all things inclusion and a little bit of nonsense. If you like this podcast and like what we're doing, please subscribe wherever you listen and write a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. It really helps folks find us. Also, if you would like to become a supporter of this podcast, you can use the link in the show notes. Thanks, guys. Let's get to the episode. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. My name is Devin Weeks, and today we have Michelle Dickinson with us. Michelle, how are you?
I'm great, Devin. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are so welcome. Okay, so first, I guess we'll start with the way I start with everybody. Tell me about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So I live in New Jersey. I grew up here. It's my home state. I'm a Jersey girl. I grew up with a mother who had bipolar disorder. So I know what it's like to care for someone with a mental illness very intimately. And I recently, actually, it's almost 2 years now, I released a memoir that highlighted what that experience was like for me growing up with my mom and the highs and lows of her bipolar disorder. And because I wanted to humanize the whole mental health perspective so people could have some compassion and understanding of what it means to care for someone with a mental illness. And then, and I've had 19 years in the pharmaceutical industry, recently decided to no longer be part of that industry and go out and make a difference with mental health. And when I was at my Fortune 500 company, I experienced depression for the first time. I was adopted, so it wasn't something that I had inherited from my mother, but it was more so a life event that kind of took me out and had me deal with depression, just reminding me that absolutely nobody's immune to mental illness, no matter what. And then at the same time, I was helping to build the largest, fastest growing mental health employee resource group within my company. So I like to say I have this trifecta perspective on mental health, and I'm out to make a difference.
That's great. So statistics say that mental health illness is the most expensive illness in healthcare. Why do you think that?
Yeah, so it's actually $17 billion and is lost annually in productivity due to unaddressed mental health concerns. And I think a lot of us are still afraid to admit why we take off from work because we don't want to be judged. So a lot of this is about fear and shame and having employees not be willing to have a candid conversation about their brain health with their manager. And so it's silently impacting the bottom line, whether or not companies are looking at it or not.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be because I'm on anxiety medication, and without that medication, I can't really function. So yeah, I can definitely see how that would be like a loss in productivity.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You also say that $1 spent in investing in mental health in the workplace has a $3 to $5 return. How is that?
Yeah. So when you think about what that means, it comes down to organizations that are offering employee assistance programs are wonderful, and excellent benefits and access to mental health care is wonderful. But I think that companies that truly are wanting to create loyal workforces and truly high performing environments should consider doing more. And when you invest in your employees, you're investing in your greatest asset. So when I say do more than that, what does that mean? There's so many things that companies can be doing now. I know a lot of times when companies want to do something, they lean toward mental health first aid. So they can equip their employees to know the signs and symptoms of people that they work with and people that they love. But there's even something more powerful, and that's a peer-to-peer program that really leverages the lived experience of employees so that they can support one another and maybe not be so hesitant to make that phone call, that 800 phone call to get a therapist, maybe just relate to someone who's navigated depression. So when it comes down to it, if you take the time to really care for your people, investing in their well-being, it's going to come back to the company in productivity and loyalty and just, you know, a genuine desire to be at work and want to contribute.
Yeah. And there's a stigma associated with mental health. How has that affected those who need help? I could probably answer this question, but I'll
answer that. You want me to answer it first? But I'd love to hear your answer. Yeah. You know, honestly, I think when my mom had bipolar when I was younger, I was ashamed of even talking about my mother's illness because, you know, kids are cruel and kids can make your life really hard if they know that your mom is not well. So I kept that as a burden and as a secret myself. Since then, you know, we've seen the courageous stories of athletes and famous people who are outspoken about their mental illness. And I think that's really helping to condition the environment so people will feel more comfortable talking about it. So we've come so far, but at the end of the day, we still relate to mental health as something that is to be ashamed of, and we fear what judgment and we fear what treatment could look like. And so those are the two barriers that prevent people from reaching out and getting the help that they deserve. And at the end of the day, the brain is just another organ, and that's where we need people to get that the brain truly just sometimes needs support, and there should be no shame in it. And we should strategize with one another, just like if we had heart disease, like what would you do for yourself, and really talk to each other.
Yeah. And speaking of famous people, are you familiar with Lady Gaga's work at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Little Monsters. Absolutely. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah, she did an interview with Oprah. It'll be out on her Facebook page tomorrow. But I saw it on YouTube because somebody filmed it. I was in the audience. And, like, Lady Gaga hasn't always been my favorite. Like, I've just been okay with her. But, like, that interview was so amazing. So I highly encourage it will be out tomorrow. But whenever you're listening to this podcast, after you're done listening to it, go over to Oprah's Facebook page, or it may be somewhere online by the time we were listening to this, and watch the interview with Lady Gaga, because that is incredible. Yeah.
And isn't that what it's all about? When we see the people that we look up to, the people that entertain us, the people that have this persona that they got it all together, and they're willing to talk openly about something like this, doesn't it just humanize it and make it more relatable? Isn't it awesome? Yeah.
And when I say Lady Gaga went in depth, I mean, she went, I mean, everything. I mean, wow. Like, yeah. She went, like, medication. She revealed in there that she had, like, a psychotic breakdown and described what that was like.
Wow. Awesome. I'm going to go check that out for sure. I want to see that. That's what we should all be sharing with people so they don't fear it.
It'll be on, I'm sorry, I said the wrong place. It'll be on WW Now IGTV. So, like, if you go to their Instagram account, they should have, like, a little snippet of it. And then you can hit watch IGTV video, and it may make you download the app, but the whole video will be up on the IGTV.
Awesome. Tomorrow. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
So you created 5 steps to cultivating a culture of compassion. What are those steps?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things companies can do, I will tell you. You know, some of the things that I learned when I was at my former company were really around how do you condition a culture to be more compassionate and understanding? And because you can't just go into a company and just expect people to start sharing, right? You really need to cultivate a culture of inclusion, a culture of accepting everyone for who they are, and diversity truly being something that is that is ingrained in the organization. So I think there are five things people can do, organizations can do. They first need to have a clear vision and a commitment of inclusion for invisible disabilities, and that has to happen at the highest level. And it has to be backed by organizational policies that really support that that's the remit of the organization, that people of all backgrounds and all physical and mental abilities should be accepted for who they are and supported in being able to contribute to the organization. Yeah. Then, yeah, hands down,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's much, well, I won't say it's impossible, but it's much harder to go back and add policies than it is to start with them. Yeah. So it's preferably, if it's possible, it's got to be from inception and not and yeah. not added later. Because that's yeah. So
yeah. Like I have a former colleague of mine, she struggles with autism. The company went to an open workspace that just didn't work for her, right? They need to be able to meet employees with all abilities and support their needs so that they can thrive, because there's talent. Every single human being offers beautiful talent, and we should be able to accommodate them for whatever they need so they can contribute.
Yes, and all workplaces should be fully, you know, handicap accessible. And I can't believe I'm having to say that in 2020, but I'm having to say that.
Sure. So number two, so let me just rattle the rest of these off real quick, because you asked me and I have to complete the question. So so number two, I have a robust and easily accessible mental health support. So what does that mean? That means you have an EAP and a benefits program where an employee picks up the phone and calls, finally has the courage to reach out for support, and isn't told, we can get you in 3 months. Like, easily and accessible healthcare is critical for those people who are motivated to get the support they need. And then number three I have is education and training of people leaders. So no matter what you say at the topest levels of the organization, no matter what your organizational remit is, if you're people leaders, the face of the organization, are not emotionally intelligent and trained to be able to have a conversation around mental health with their people, then you're missing the boat. Last year, this very month, I had a performance review where I had a boss tell me I did not bring my bubbly, upbeat self to work. Therefore, I was getting a negative review. So that is the kind of insensitivities that we need to abolish, and people leaders need to get a hold of, so they understand what that, you know, how that felt for me and how that feels for other people when you judge them on that. Then number four, as I mentioned, there's an amazing resource called a peer program where you actually go into an organization and you train employees with lived mental health experience to be the support mechanism in addition to EAP and benefits, because you remove a barrier. So an employee can want to support someone, but unless they've lived that journey and have come out the other side, they can't offer that perspective of hope that, you know, a certain employee who has dealt with it could. So I am a strong proponent of a trained, structured peer program within the workforce. And then finally, number five I have is a culture that's ready for employee sharing. And that could be in the form of a TED platform, vignettes, pre-recorded vignettes, where you have a leader who talks openly about their experiences with mental illness, panel discussions, or storytelling. Those are great ways to cultivate conversation within the workplace.
And what do you mean by EAP?
Sure. It's employee assistance programs. Most large organizations offer a benefits program, but then an employee assistance program is really like an 800 number where you can call for support and they can help connect you to benefits or resources that you may not be familiar with.
And about the the boss, did you like say anything? Like, did you like report that? Or
Devin, I was dumbfounded because 6 months earlier, I took all I could to find the courage to disclose to her that I was diagnosed with depression and that I was doing the best I could. And then for her to judge me on my being, you know, not bubbly and upbeat, I was flabbergasted. I was completely speechless. And also, looking back, I think that was exactly what I needed to feel to ignite my passion within me to want to cause change. So it's perfect.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Sorry you had to go through that, but yeah, maybe it's for a reason. I don't know.
Exactly.
So tell us about your memoir, Breaking Into Life, and why did you write it?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So I wrote and released my memoir early 2018, because I had stepped on the TED stage and told my story for the first time about what it was like growing up with my bipolar mom. And the reception that I received was overwhelming. And I was like, I have got to write this because I think I could actually make a difference for people and how they relate to mental illness. And I could use it as a conversation starter to really cause a shift in how we all relate to mental health. So the book is, it's pretty intense. My girlfriend actually just told me that she finished it last night and she was like, oh, Michelle, it was so sad. She goes, but it's actually sad, but at the end, it's really a story of triumph and perseverance because the book itself reveals experiences that were hard for me to navigate. But at the end of the day, all those experiences have served me and have made me into the woman that I've become. And I guess what I really want readers to get is no matter what your past looks like, you get the pen is in your hand and you get to write your future. So
that is awesome.
Yeah.
And where can people get that book?
You can go to my website to learn about my mental health programs for the workplace and beyond. That's MichelleEDickinson.com.
And all those links will be in the show notes. So
awesome. And then my book is available on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com as well.
Okay. And again, all those links will be in the show notes. You also have a youth program entitled Perfect Just the Way You Are. Tell us about that if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So, several years ago, I got really connected to wanting to cause change for children, specifically around the obesity epidemic and the bullying epidemic, because I saw so many issues of children being bullied in the news and children taking their lives. And then we had this obesity epidemic where children were just not healthy. And, you know, the generation that is now our youth, their life expectancy was shorter than their parents. So you're just like, what is going on? So I decided to create this program called Perfect Just the Way You Are as an after-school enrichment program for middle school kids because I wanted them to learn how to nourish their body, how to nourish their minds, and then I wanted them to get leadership skills. So the really cool part about this program is it started out as a collective mental, physical health program, and it recently evolved into a one-day mental health wellness fair where we focus exclusively on tools and resources that really empower youth to navigate stressful times and understand their emotions and prepare themselves for high school and, you know, testing and then college and overall mental well-being. So if you're interested in learning more about the program, there's a short video from the last program we ran. It was a one-day program and we canvassed the entire school, the entire student body went through this program. And it was just wonderful. We really left the kids empowered around taking care of their mental well-being, which I think is so critical nowadays.
That is awesome. Like, I'm in college, and I wish, I won't get too much into it, but I wish my school had a mental health program, they have therapists and stuff, but I wish they had a program to, like, prepare us for all the testing, because it can be quite the adjustment.
Right. Just how do I deal with anxiety? How do I deal with stress when I'm feeling emotions? what can I do to take care of myself and nurture myself? Like, there's so many great resources and tools out there that if we just teach kids them, they're going to be able to navigate the stressful times and not feel like, you know, they're out of control with what they can do, you know?
Yeah. And so do people ever have a fear of mental illness? And if they do, why is that fear unreasonable?
Yeah, you know, I think back to, you know, the picture that's been painted in the media of mental illness. You know, like I said earlier, though, we do have celebrities that are offsetting the negative, I guess, conversation around mental illness by humanizing their experience, which is a blessing. But you have the media, you have shootings that take place, you know, inevitably, there's a picture that gets painted that has people shy away from talking about mental health because, you know, it's if you believe, if you have had no relationship to anyone with a mental illness and then it gets painted by the media of what mental illness is, it's really a disservice. So I think education and knowledge is vital. People need to educate themselves on bipolar, educate themselves on depression, the signs and symptoms, schizophrenia. What does that mean? What does that look like? And, you know, what is it like for someone with schizophrenia? What is it like to have voices in your head? You know, education and knowledge is power. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, www.nami.org, is a great resource for people to educate themselves on it. Because it is unreasonable to be afraid of it, because so many of us struggle at any given time in our life with some type of a mental illness, and it's totally common. So, yeah, it's unreasonable to be afraid.
Yeah, it's totally. I took a whole class last semester on pop culture and mental health, and it was fascinating to, like, explore some of the stigmas and, like, the media stigma and the... And the, I don't get too much into race on this podcast for obvious reasons, but race and stigma. And yeah, it was incredible to see, like, how much stigma there still is, like,
right,
in the media. Yeah. So on that subject, whenever mental illness is discussed in the media, it's always because a horrible thing happened. People act as if this is a one in a million experience. Considering mm-hmm. that so many people are living with mental illness themselves or are a parent of a child or a child of someone with mental illness, what can we do to normalize mental illness and make it relatable?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think where there's conversation, there can't be stigma. So it's having the courage to go first. It's having the courage to initiate a conversation about mental health that wasn't going to happen without you. And that's something that I try to do all the time, but I have a book, right? So the book is kind of like my permission slip to say, hey, did you hear about my book? And then to engage in a conversation. So I think what the thing that we can all do, there are two things that we can all do. And the first thing is we can be courageous to start a conversation about mental health. And just by us going first, it creates the space for other people to engage in that kind of conversation. The second thing that we can all do is check in with one another and just ask each other, are you okay? Like eyeball to eyeball, because how many times are we looking at our phones and we're looking at our computers and we're not connecting with one another, human to human? And how amazing could it be if we all just paused for a moment and looked into each other's eyes and really just checked in and people felt cared for?
Yeah. And honestly, like, this is my own question. How do you feel about, like, social media being so much linked to mental illness? Like, do you feel like it's, like, stigmatizing, or do you feel like it's, like, needed? Because I hear some people say, oh, it's needed, and some people say, oh, that stigmatizes things. And so
it's a double-edged sword. It's an amazing resource to have so much at our fingertips and be able to connect with so many people at our fingertips, right? There's no doubt I get to connect with people that I wouldn't ordinarily connect with, and there's a benefit in that. But there's a silent comparison that's always going on social media. And there's a saying that goes, comparison is a thief of joy. Social media is a curated reflection of reality. People only share what looks good. They don't share the ugly, the stressful, the upsets. They share what makes them look good. And therefore, it cultivates this environment of comparison. So I would agree that it definitely does contribute to the mental health concerns, but we have control over it. So I had a very dear friend of mine say to me when I was hitting my low point with depression, take the damn apps off of your phone. Delete them for at least a week. Don't look at them for a week. And you'll see your mental well-being will be better. So sometimes we need a detox and we need to step away, maybe delete Instagram, Facebook, Twitter from our phone for a short period of time, take a break, detox, and then come back. Because whether or not we think it's happening, there is a constant comparison that's taking place whenever you look at it.
I guess, but the problem I have with it is like, it just like, exacerbates, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's stigmatizing, but people do have good points. And I've never thought about it like in the way that you said it. So maybe I'll do a detox or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think every now and then we all need a detox from social media. You know, like people take vacations, take a hiatus. Listen, I'm leaving my phone at home. That's like the most healthy thing you could do is just stop looking at it for a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know why I said, I guess. I didn't mean to say that. I was just thinking about it. I was like, yeah, I guess. I don't know. is there anything else you would like to add before we get off?
No, I think, you know, the two points that I made earlier, check in with one another. You could be the only person who asks someone how they're doing. I mean, it sounds small, but someone could be having a really, really low point in their life, and you checking in with them could make all the difference. And just don't ever underestimate the power of, are you okay? Because it could go a long way. I mean, they may not have people at home looking after them and caring for them. And there's just something so important about feeling cared for. So check in with each other, make sure everyone's okay.
Okay. And once again, where can they follow you on social media?
Oh, sure. So you could follow me. So my website is michelleedickinson.com. My book is on Amazon or on barnesandnoble.com. And my, my Instagram is M Dickinson. Oh my God, I don't even know.
Yeah, it's
M Dickinson 31. Or 71. No, Michelle Dickinson 71 is my Instagram.
I have the link right here. So
perfect. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Devin. It was so great to meet you.
You are so welcome. And you can follow me at We Are Talk Podcast Official on Instagram. And you can like the Facebook page, Talk All Things Inclusion. And we will see you. Bye, guys.
Thank you guys so much for listening today. You can visit us online at WeWillTalkPodcastOnline.wordpress.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at @WeWillTalk and on Instagram at @WeWillTalkPodcastOfficial. You can also email us at @DevinEWieters@gmail.com. Thank you guys.